Okay, I'm going to start off brief introduction and then go through an overview of the halachos, the laws of Baal Talin, not paying on time, and then I'm going to throw out some practical cases, and we'll all sound off what we think from our vast knowledge that we'll acquire in the next few minutes, what we think the law ought to be. This is a very, very, very interesting topic. First of all, I want to thank, we have a very generous sponsor this morning, Anonymous and Humble. I want to thank them for that. Always been a friend to the Kollel, much appreciated. And I want to wish everybody here a Yisher Koach for participating. It's a beautiful thing. And like Rabbi Haber hinted to, I think it's a big schus. You know, the whole year, everyone's super busy and you have rare days off. And to take off from that time to come and sit down and learn together is a beautiful thing. But it also is an indication on the rest of the year when we say, you know, we'd love to learn more, we're so busy. And then Hashem says, okay, what do you do when you have the time? And everybody who's here today and says, you know, they put their money where their mouth is, or maybe they put their mouth where their money is, and they came in and learned when they would otherwise be working. And that should go back on every other day of the year and say, this is where I'd be if I didn't have to work so hard. So it's a big schus for all of us here and for the whole community. We should have schus that a ksiva chsima tova. Okay. The idea of learning these halachas and other similar halachas is an interesting, a good story with, I forgot who it was, but it was a rav, and the town shochet came to the rav, and he was the one show in town. He was the only shochet in town. And all the meat and chicken was from this guy. And he said, I'm getting out of the business. I'm getting out of Shechita. And the Rav said, why? Like, everyone was panicking. We're not going to have any chicken or meat. We're going to have to order from Baltimore, you know? So I'm not going to have any chicken or meat. So he said, no, it was in Europe. So he said, I can't take the responsibility. You know, the kashrus of everybody's food is hanging on me. I can't handle that responsibility. So the Rav said, okay, so what are you going to do? He said, I'll go into business. He said, business? He says, the laws of Shechita are like this. You know, the laws of business. You have to learn all the choshem mishpat, interest and paying and this and that. You'll never know anything about how to do it. The laws are vast, and these are things that we deal with day in and day out, many of us, some more, some less. And it's very important to know these halachas to get it right. Specifically on the topic of these laws, so the Chavetz Chaim has a Sefer Avas Chesed that discusses many such laws of interaction between people, and he has a couple chapters on these particular halachas. He's one of the authoritative sources on here. There's not a lot, so he has a very scary introduction. I won't go into it at length, but he quotes the Gemara that says that we saw in the sources that not paying on time is like you're taking the person's life. There's the Zohar describes that, says that a person who doesn't pay on time, it shortens his life. When he pays on time, it lengthens his life. The Zohar describes kind of scary stuff, that the breath, all the heavy breath of the worker throughout his day of working goes up to Shemayim at night when they're all sleeping, and it complains to Hashem that he didn't get, the breath goes up, so to speak, and complains that he didn't get paid, and it's bad news for the guy who doesn't pay. But then he finishes up that, and he says, whenever you do pay, you're fulfilling a positive commandment. He says, we don't find by other positive commandments that you wait around. If someone has shofar, someone has lul, you don't find that, like, you wait till right before nightfall, and you're like, oh, okay, we have 5 more minutes, better blow shofar quickly, or we have 5 more minutes, better shake lulav quickly. Positive commandments, we grab the opportunity to do them with excitement. He says, you have a positive commandment here to pay a worker on time, besides all the negative ones. And I saw that Rav Pam, Avram Pam, the Rashiv of Tar Vadas, so he heard from the Chavetz Chaim's son-in-law, of Zax, that he had once been riding on with the taxi of the day. He was riding with a wagon driver with the Chavetz Chaim, his father-in-law, and they got out. He paid the driver, and they walked down. The Chavetz Chaim yelled at him. He said, "Just gave money to the guy just like that. You know what you did? You just fulfilled whatever it is, 4 mitzvahs." He said, "By paying him on time, you just do it like that. You don't think you're doing mitzvahs." There was a story also of the Chavetz Chaim that someone saw him. He paid, and he got out in the snow and started dancing. He was so excited that he fulfilled the mitzvah. That's really the attitude we have to have, and we should be looking at it that way. So in that light, let's run through an overview of this halacha. So there are six mitzvahs d'oraisa. There are six biblical commandments that are involved here. The first one is Lo Sasho Gesreyecha. That I think the halachic authorities, the poskim, understand to be referring specifically when you're not paying at all. If you decide I'm just not paying, which happens, so then you've transgressed not to oppress your friend. The next one is Lo Sigzal, not stealing. Same thing. If you're not paying at all, that's called stealing. The next one is Lo Salim Pulas Sachir, not to keep it until morning. That's like we'll see, or did see, that if they're owed their work at night because they work till sunset or they finish their work at some point during the night, then you have the whole night to pay till sunrise. If you fail to do that, you've transgressed this particular transgression. The next one is Lo Sasik Shir Ani Ve'Evyon. That's a specific transgression for someone who's poor. If the worker is poor, then there's another one that's on top of it. the next one is Lo Sevel Abashemesh, that the sun shouldn't set. Again, if their wage is due during the day and you fail to pay before sunset, then transgress that one. And then the Biyom Titen Schar is a positive commandment. That's the one the Chafetz Chaim is talking about, that when you pay somebody on time, you fulfill the positive commandment. You're like shaking a lulav, putting on tefillin, you've served Hashem, fulfilling a positive commandment.
Rabbi, yes? Does it matter whether it's a goy or a yid?
We're going to get there.
Because of the commandment?
Yeah, we're going to get there.
Okay.
Then there's a mitzvah derabanan that the Gemara discusses. The Gemara calls it baltisha, don't delay paying. That doesn't come from the Torah, but Chazal did base it on a pasuk in Mishlei. Pasuk says, Al tomer l'reach leich v'shov, it says it there twice, leich v'shuv v'machar etin v'yeshitach. You're not supposed to tell your... The pasuk says initially, don't tell your friend, yeah, come back, I'll pay you, and you have the money, and you just keep pushing him off. So Chazal, based on that pasuk, a rabbinic ruling not to delay payment when you owe. Okay, so as we mentioned, if the worker finishes at night, at sunset and on, they must be paid before dawn, really. If they finish at any point during the day, then they must be paid before sunset. And when one pays, they fulfill a positive commandment of Biyomo Titen Scharo. Now, important, all these mitzvahs deraisa, all the biblical commandments that we've discussed, I mean, not the ones about stealing, but the ones about paying on time specifically, only apply the first day. So whether a person transgressed it, or for some reason there were certain circumstances that made him not obligated to pay the first day, that's it. Past the first day, you don't have any of these. What you have is the derabanan. So even if the guy was a bad guy, didn't pay, or like we'll see some of the reasons why a person wouldn't have to pay on the first day. But after that point, a person delays forever. He's not transgressing any of the biblical ones. He's transgressing a rabbinic rule. Baal Tisha, don't delay.
Unless it's not a lamanita glase that you can fix, make up. Yovo Tivin Scharo is not an assay to fix up. The lowest assay, if you don't pay, so you already lost.
Yeah, but it's not totally unlike.
We'll see.
It's not totally unlike a lavanite classe in a certain sense. It's maybe a little bit like you can fix sort of what you're doing. I'll see. That's a good point. It's not so clear to me if it's exactly how that works. We'll see. Okay, the question is, when you pay later, have you fixed up what you did? So to a degree, you have. How much have you fixed up by having not paid? Okay, now who must be paid on time? Who does this apply to? So really, any kind of worker, someone gets paid per hour, an hourly worker has to be paid that day. Also, somebody gets paid per job, what the Gemara calls an hour one is called a sachir. Someone who gets paid per job is called a pol kablan. Kablan gets paid. Your dentist is a kablan, right? Fix my tooth, right? Make the filling. He doesn't get paid per hour. Repairman, fix the thing. A tailor, fix the suit, right? So there are some exceptions. If the minig is for that particular profession to bill, and many of the expectations, really, like we'll see, the expectations of payment depend heavily on the prevalent custom where you are. So someone like a dentist, I think, bills, as opposed to expecting payment when you walk out, whereas I know the tailor probably does not as much and the repairman less so. So if the custom, prevalent custom is to bill, so then he doesn't have an expectation to get paid on the spot. So then you don't transgress the Isser. And again, once you don't transgress it the first day, then even when you're a bum and you don't pay him, you haven't transgressed any Isser Daraisa anymore, any biblical commandment, because the expectation to get paid the first day was given up. What you are transgressing is the rabbinic the rabbinic ruling not to delay. Every time, as long as you get the bill in the mail and you just don't pay, that's the Rabbanan Baltisha. You have till Shkia, till nightfall, exactly.
No, till sunrise.
It depends when the work was finished. When the Gemara says that you have till night for day work, it's where it finishes at Shkia. Yes. If they finished during the day, you have to pay them before sunset.
12 hours, it says.
You have to tell them until next morning.
Right? 12 hours till next
morning. It's if you finish at the end of the day. If he finished at the end of the day. If he finishes during the day,
if you finish work at 5:45, 6 o'clock,
if he worked from 9 till 3,
Shkia
is until 6,
yeah.
You have to pay him by 6.
What if he worked at 5:45?
Yeah.
I don't. Okay,
It might depend on whether it's possible, what the expected time of payment is. You know, if it's so fast you can't get the money out of your pocket. But if there's time to pay, you have to pay before the end of that day.
If he did a lousy job, for example, can you shave off Hasse and not do the mitzvah? And say you have to get somebody else to fix up the mess you made?
If he didn't finish the job, he didn't finish the job. A lousy job may not be finishing the job. Well, I'm sorry? My understanding of the halacha is that if the work is finished during a meis leis, you have till the end of that, whatever, you have till the next. If you finish during the day, you have till shkia to pay. And if it finishes during the night, you have till alos. When the Gemara says you have the next one, it's when it finishes, you work till the buzzer, so to speak, or close to it, maybe.
Only okay. When he leaves at Shkias HaKham. But if he left earlier during the day, then you don't have.
Right.
The dentist, he bills, right? But even if you don't pay, you're only violating the Dura Bona, you don't violate the Sigzal?
Exactly. Although Sigzal, for sure you do. That only applies to the Baltalin, and they have to do with just paying on time. Well, Sigzal is you're taking someone else's money, you're keeping someone else's money, that for sure you're over there. Yeah, if you don't pay at all. Okay, if you delay, then you're not. I mean, as long as you pay, you're not stealing. Okay. Now, another example is a steady client. The prevalent minig is, and that's subject to change and subject to the field, but generally a steady client, people aren't particular that you pay each time. Let's say this is someone you deal with on a regular basis, or you see them fairly regularly, or there's a series of procedures that's going on, so you don't need to get people don't require payment each time. They say, okay, you're coming, whatever, we'll pay when it's all done, we'll pay every other. So as long as, again, any time that there's an understanding, a given understanding, that you're not expecting payment at the end of it, so then it doesn't apply. Okay, a craftsman, right? You give a watch to get fixed, you give your car to the mechanic, you give a suit to get tailored. So the halacha is you don't have to pay until he returns the article. And there's a three-way machlokas as to why that's true. Why is it true that there's no requirement to pay? He finishes his work, but he didn't give it back yet. You don't have to pay it. So the Sma says that as long as he's holding on to it, he's got collateral. That's a unique opinion, but that he holds that if you've given collateral against the wage, so then you haven't transgressed anything as long as he has collateral. Most authorities argue with that, but that we'll see why that's halachically relevant, that opinion. That's how he understands the idea that if he's got your thing still, then you haven't transgressed it. The Aruch HaShulchan L'Ktzos, slightly different maybe, but similar ideas, they say that as long as he's got it, he can't make you pay. You've got my car still. You can't make me pay for your work while you still have my car. You can't make me pay for hemming my suit when you've got my suit. So he can't demand payment. We'll see why that's relevant. Or the job's not done yet. It's considered as if the job isn't done. Very nice. You sewed up, you officially made the hem, but it's not done until I have it, until you give it to me. As long as you're not finished, I don't owe you a payment for it. That's the second opinion.
If he has it and he wants to give it back to you, he said no, but you don't want to take it back.
Right, so we're getting there. It really depends on these reasons. And then the last opinion is the Meiri, who says that until he gives it back, he's indicating, by having not given it back, he's indicating that he's okay not having gotten his money yet. Okay, the fact that he hasn't given it back yet indicates that. So now, what happens if the craftsman wants to return it? He lets you know that you have it, he wants to return it, and he says, he says, not just that he says it's done, but he says, you know, please come get it. Or if he says, please come get it and pay me. Right? So there, it's a machlokas, like we had in the sources. The Chavetz Chaim says, you're okay. You can just refuse it. He says, even if the guy comes and drops it off at your house, you could say, I'm not taking it. And you don't, and you're not, and you haven't transgressed anything yet. The Aruch HaShulchan, what?
But yet.
Sorry?
You haven't transgressed anything yet.
Till you get it. Till you take it, right? The Aruch HaShulchan says it doesn't work that way. And the Aruch HaShulchan makes sense according to his logic, right? His logic was that the reason why when he has your item, you don't have to pay, you're not transgressing anything, is because he can't ask for the money. But if he puts it on your doorstep, or if he says, I got it, come take it, he's asking for the money. Same thing with the Meiri, makes a lot of sense that it would be that way. The Meiri again said that the fact that he hasn't returned it is an indication of his willingness to not get paid yet. If the guy is on the phone saying, pay me, so then there goes your indication. Fine. So it's a machlokas Chavetz Chaim in Bir Halacha and the Aruch HaShulchan, whether or not you can do that. You can refuse to accept the item. And but Halacha Lamaisa, you could rely, and Mishnah Berurah is reliable, if you, you know, in not,
it doesn't matter if he has a posted policy, all merchandise must be paid for, so upfront, you know, as a customer that he's demanding it, you know, if you don't
pay. I don't know.
He won't take it with,
yeah,
if you don't pay. If he has that policy, then they're not going to take it to begin with.
No. Oh, no, he's saying,
you're not going to do the work.
His policy is pay upfront.
No, not pay upfront. Pay within, whatever.
So you're probably doing something wrong. The question is, are you transgressing these particular things? Okay. Now, according to the Meiri, I would think that even if he didn't return it, he just says, I want my money. That's it, you're done. If the whole point is that it seems like he doesn't care, so if he just tells you, I want to get paid, he doesn't need to come and drop it off on your front lawn for you to have to pay him. Okay, next thing is that if a craftsman uses his own materials. So let's say you go to a tailor and you say, make me a suit. And he has it's his fabric. Or you go to a furniture manufacturer and you say, make me a piece of furniture, right? If he's using his own wood, he's using his own fabric. So even though you're paying him for all the work of taking the stuff, the raw materials, and making it into an item, but the Torah views it as a sale. It's not that you're paying him for his labor. You're paying him to buy the finished item that he's making for you. And a sale, you don't have any of these prohibitions. So you won't transgress any of these
affairs.
Okay. The next thing is salary. When you have people who get paid not daily for whenever they finish their work, like a repairman that comes, he does his job, he gets paid. You have people, most people get paid weekly or monthly or biweekly. So these halachas apply on the day that their salary is due. So whatever the arrangement is, if you're the day that your salary is due, if it comes up during the daylight hours, so then the averik, the mitzvah kicks in, and you have until nightfall to pay the worker.
What happens for us on a Shabbos or weekend? You have to do it early, or
right. So I think that would fall under the category of where there's a given understanding that you're not going to get paid. Anytime, like we said, anytime there's an understanding ahead of time, you're not going to get paid for whatever reason, either because the custom is to bill or whatever. In that case, it's understood you're not going to get paid on a Shabbos or on a weekend or on a holiday.
If a weekend is coming, you're supposed to get paid over that weekend. You get paid before the weekend. Isn't that the general working rule?
It would depend on what the
companies push it off to the following Monday.
They say the following workday.
Yeah.
Workday following payday.
So whatever the custom is.
Let's say 10 minutes before Shkia, like you said earlier, if he finishes during the day, pay him 10 minutes.
The place can bring down that the Arizal would delay Mincha very close to Shkia, very close to Shkia, in order to get money to pay workers on time.
So that means, let's say, for example, nowadays, say you have automatic bank drafts and things, so those get posted at the end of 8 o'clock or something like that, right? So then, does that mean that a workplace has to pay attention to what time Shkia is and adjust? Payday.
No, because your arrangement to pay, that's the arrangement.
So you have the arrangement that you're supposed to get paid the first of the month, so you don't have to worry about the first of the month before Shkia. Because the arrangement says the first of the month. So if you say, well, but first of the month, the arrangement is before the first of the month, so it has to be Shkia, or the arrangement is first of the month by bank transfer, whatever the bank needs to transfer.
Right, that's an understanding. They know that's how it's working, and they know that that's what's going to happen.
If you take a job working for a nonprofit, and the understanding is they sometimes really have really nonprofit,
Let's leave personal grievances at us. Okay.
It's a real question. I don't know what the answer is.
Go see your
Rav. We're going to get there. The halachas apply to a child. The halachas apply to a child as well, not just an adult. If you hire your next door neighbor to mow your lawn as a child, you pay him. Okay. These halachas apply to Isser Daraisa, to not play a child on time. These halachas, the overwhelming consensus is that they do not apply to a non-Jew. But the poskim already make a very big emphasis on the fact that there's a very high risk of chilul Hashem, of desecrating Hashem's name by not paying on time, and that if that would be the case, which it most certainly would, then it's usur, not because of these things, but it's forbidden because you're desecrating Hashem's name by not paying your worker on time. Right, that's a very good point. It would be the definition would be whatever would be a chilul Hashem. So, if
a reasonable thing,
right.
So he wouldn't think you're paying him late.
Right, exactly. That's a good point. It applies to rental of items. So you rent a car, you rent a lawnmower, all this stuff. You have to pay whatever the deal is that you're going to pay by. It's just like paying for a worker.
Real estate also.
So land is a machlokas. There's a machlokas in the poskim about renting land, and the poskim say that it's worthwhile to be stringent, like the stringent opinion that even paying rental on land. Apartments, buildings, very interesting. The ktsos that we quoted on the last page, may not have gotten to, is of the opinion that it's even more like property. Very interesting, because it was bricks that were detached from the ground that were subsequently attached to the ground. So a building is actually more like property, more like a lawnmower than it is like land. So apartment rentals and house rentals and other such things.
So when you say land, you mean I'm renting someone's farm?
Yeah. Right. It's land. It's land. I mean, it's only a man-made building that would have this additional stringency. Okay. What? A man dug cave. No, it has to have been detached on the ground and attached. So if they piled up the dirt into a cave, that would be like that. But not if it was dug. Okay.
Sorry, just to make sure. Are you talking about the monthly rental for an apartment?
Right. That would be one example. Yeah. We'll see other applications.
Yeah, paying your monthly rent.
You've transgressed all these deraisas by not paying your rent on time for your house. What?
If the landowner is Jewish.
If the
rental agreement that says you're allowed 5 days or whatever.
Right, most of these things are probably covered by some kind of lease, yeah.
And last question for me, my question is, what if you mailed, you didn't have to pay rent, you had to do it through...
You mailed a check?
Yeah, he hasn't gotten it yet.
So the poskim say, you need to mail it on time.
So it gets there on time.
Yeah, and if you don't, it's your problem, yeah.
It's an issue, yeah.
Yeah, it's a problem. Yeah, it's your responsibility. Part of your mitzvah responsibility of paying on time includes mailing it on time. Unless there's an understanding that you're mailing it every month and you mailed it on time and the post office in Israel went on strike for some reason daily, so then it's a given that if you're mailing your check, the post office will go on strike. Yeah.
It doesn't only apply to Jews, right?
What?
Kisharecha says get tushar.
I'm sorry, right? But that's something that we don't really have.
Definitely
not. We don't have such a thing in our midst.
Well,
Ger Toshav has to like be mekabel zayim mitzvahs b'nei noach b'shita. They have to mekabel b'tor mitzvah. It's not like if he happens to not care about anything besides watching baseball that he's like, all of a sudden he's like a rash kabah. Okay.
with the rent. Slashing even payment. What happens if you have someone, you either owe rent or you owe someone salary, and you realize you're not going to have the money? So if you speak to the person before.
We'll get there. We're going to get there. Patience. Okay.
I don't know.
Okay. Now, how must you pay? So the mitzvah requires that you pay in full. So making a token payment or down payment does not fulfill the mitzvah. The mitzvah is that you pay in full, and the mitzvah is that you pay cash. The understanding of Chazal is that the worker is dependent on his payment in order to pay for his food and other basic needs. So you have to pay with liquidity. Now, so what about paying checks? Checks is very interesting. So checks is a machlokas, first of all. It's a machlokas for Moshe Feinstein or B'Yashiv Zatzal, again, it's Moshe Sternbach, probably amongst others, whether or not you could use checks in America. In Israel, you could for sure use checks because they're much more liquid. You can go to any guy in the corner and get cash for your check. But in America, it's not so simple to get cash out of a check, especially payroll checks are not so simple. So it's a machlokas. Moshe Feinstein and Rabbi Yashiv both were of the opinion that you've not fulfilled the mitzvah of paying your worker on time with a check in the United States, unless that's the minig, I think. I'm not even sure you fulfill the mitzvah, but you for sure could do it if it's the minig. So certain things, the minig is to pay with a check. Most employees get paid with a check, or many employees get paid with a check or direct deposit. But something that's not the minig to get paid.
Direct deposit is different than a check, though, because right? It's already in your account.
Okay. Okay.
And now right. They have mobile deposit. They don't have mobile deposits on checks.
Yeah, but you still hold in the check.
Yeah, it's not really cash. Yeah.
And the hold, right, even if the hold's on part of it, even
if, federal or state.
Even if it's on part of the check, you haven't paid the full wage, which is what the mitzvah requires of you. What was I saying? Oh, if the minig is for a certain profession that they get paid in check, then that's the given understanding ahead of time. He knows that he may get paid with a check. Now, what about post-dated check? So, if they agree to take a post-dated check, that's their prerogative. What? You write a date late on the check later than the current date so that, in theory, they can't check it, although from experience, they actually works when they put it in. but they're not supposed to. So you've given them a piece of paper they can't really use for whatever, right?
Because maybe they haven't been paid yet. So
once
they
have check money in their account, they promise
that
pay,
date
is illegal.
Right? You see what I'm saying?
Fine.
They can't cash that check until they have money there.
So if they agree, you can do whatever you want. If they don't agree, it's a very interesting thing. The poskim say that it's better than nothing. Why is it better than nothing? Because we saw that opinion before, the Sma. The Sma was one of a kind opinion that you don't transgress any of these prohibitions if you've given collateral. So the poskim say that a post-dated check would serve as collateral against the payment. So at the very least, you've satisfied one opinion by providing a post-dated check, but it's the last resort.
How is that collateral?
Well, if the point of collateral is that he has a means of getting his payment at some point.
Yeah, but that's because you have
some point.
But when it passes the date, he'll use it.
About money with Jews.
I don't think people are holding by the SMA here.
Also, the check isn't of any value.
Nolan doesn't like the SMA.
What?
The check isn't of any value until later.
The point is, arguably, it's better than nothing.
Right.
The alternative is nothing.
Why is it better than nothing? Because it's not valuable.
Theoretically,
later,
it's
so you're not paying on time.
You can't. No, you're not. No, but he has in his hands something that he could use to get his money down the road. So he's not left with nothing. You've given him a tool with which to collect. The collateral, I think the benefit of collateral isn't so much that you have something of value in and of itself. It's that I can use this to get my money tomorrow or a week from now from you because you're going to want this back. If that's the understanding, so then the check.
That's exactly the problem. A check, if I give you a check with a post-dated date and I decide I don't want to pay you, I'm just shutting you up.
Right.
And I call the bank and say, don't pay that check. You're
yeah.
not getting any. There's no way to
find the money. Okay. I hear.
I just want to read something. It says a person writing a post-dated checks may be violation of the law if the check is returned by the bank. So you're not allowed to write a post-dated check by law.
Really? I'm not promoting anything illegal.
I agree here. We should finish.
Yeah.
If you agree,
I'm
taking it. Agree. If you do it, if you
why
do
is the person writing the post-dated check? Because it doesn't have the funds available.
Right.
So what do you
want
from them?
Not really giving it. That's another, right.
Does it matter? Even if
he doesn't have the money, what's he supposed to do?
Well, we'll see. But the question is, what should you do?
He has the money. He wants to write a post-dated check anyway.
Why would he look?
What's the difference?
Because he has to pay his electric bill tomorrow, so he doesn't want to pay this person today.
That's right. That's fresh.
Who's
that?
Who's
that? Who's that? Who's that?
When he's under
your utility bill,
you're right.
The money, then
the question is, the question is,
no one does it without.
The question is, are you, do you do, do you accomplish anything by doing it? What the poskim are saying is that if you have zero recourse besides this, it's better to do this than absolutely nothing. Then tell the guy, sorry, Charlie, go home. You say, here's a post-it check. You've sent, you've may covered yourself according to the Sma, not like Rabbi Mastavsky. No, no, I don't mean you're arguing. The Sma is talking about real collateral. He's talking about real collateral. I'm saying if you put your, okay, fine. Moving along. Okay, very interesting. Credit card. So a credit card, again, depends on the minig. If the minig is to accept credit card, then that's the expectation of the person. But you do not, the post can point out, you do not fulfill a positive commandment by paying by credit card because the person doesn't get his money. So you've the guy basically agreed to accept this instead of payment. But if you want to fulfill a mitzvah, you've just missed an opportunity to pay a mitzvah with a credit card.
But the thing with the credit card is he knows right away with the computer he's going to be paid right away.
But he doesn't have the access.
Right into
the mitzvah
bank
requires a liquidity. You make the money is available right now to buy food with.
It would be go right into his account electronically.
It
takes time.
It doesn't go automatically.
Most of the time it does. I used to take them years ago.
It's faster than a check. It's faster than a check.
Okay. paying in advance, yeah. Paying before the actual time is, before it's due. According
that's
to
not a Jewish thing.
Right. So according to some, we'll see where it might be. It comes up. So according to some poskim, you don't fulfill the mitzvah saseh yet. The mitzvah didn't start yet. You didn't have the commandment to pay the guy yet. So if you pay now, you've missed the opportunity by paying in advance. You've missed the opportunity to fulfill a mitzvah. Don't pay. Right. Okay. Right. Okay. We'll see where that's nogea. Moving along. When these are the rules of when Baal Talan does not apply. First of all, if the worker didn't request payment, the whole mitzvah of paying on time only starts when the worker requests payment. Because and if he doesn't ask for it, then it's his choice. Then it's his choice not to ask for it.
Even by that sin.
That's terrible. Too. There's an expectation of getting paid.
No, I don't think so. That's a good point. I don't think so. Even if he doesn't ask, I don't believe. No. It's only on the lav. Right. There's still, you still fulfill a mitzvah by paying, even if the guy didn't ask for it.
Does a borrower have to ask?
Yeah, well, a bitl asay, no. Wow. Oh, itcha. Bitl asay. You haven't fulfilled the mitzvah. Say, have you done an aveira?
I had a kumvaseh of
B.M.T.T.N.S.H.A. The place can say, if it doesn't ask, you don't have to pay. You're not mechayiv to pay. The vaseh is not mechayiv. Maybe it's a kiyumas. I don't know why, but then you don't have to pay. Pretty sure you don't have to pay if they don't ask. Now, if we saw one of the sources was the Chavetz Chaim here on the bottom. He says that the point of this is that the fact that he's not asking is an indication that he's okay with it. So now the post can extrapolate from that if the person is embarrassed to ask, then it doesn't apply. It's only if they're not asking is an indication that they're okay with it. If there's reason to believe that they really want it and they're just too embarrassed to, then you have to pay. Also, if you have a scheduled payday, it says if they're asked. It says if they asked. So you don't need to come every second week and go to your boss and say, I want my paycheck. If it's built in, there's an automatic expectation that you want to get paid on your payday.
If you leave the country, you can't ask it.
If the boss leaves?
Yeah, the boss leaves, you can't ask it.
Also, the same thing. That's what the Chavetz Chaim is talking about. If there's, it's only where there's a clear indication that he doesn't care. If you think that he wants it, he just can't find you. So then...
Of course, someone's going to call you and ask the money.
Okay. Now, what if the worker agreed? Let's say you don't want to pay on time, you can't pay on time, or whatever the circumstances are, and you go to the worker and you say, look, things are tough, I can't really pay you, what are you okay with it? And he's pressured, so then the halacha is, he has to say it's okay. So if he says, you know, you tell the worker, I'm sorry, things are tough, you're not getting paid, and he just like shrugs, doesn't count, or he nods his head, doesn't count. He needs to say, okay.
How can it possibly be okay?
It doesn't matter. Even if the guy's mamish, like you're squeezing his neck, not literally, but you're mamish squeezing him, if he says okay, it's okay.
So even if you tell him that if you don't, then I can't afford you, I'm going to let you go?
If he says okay, it's okay, but you're not fulfilling, you're not transgressing the derai, so you're not a good guy, maybe. But.
Or if he doesn't, I'll wait for you outside when you leave your office.
I don't know about that. Okay. What?
Why would anybody say okay? Why would an employee say okay? I'm okay with not getting paid.
They're pressured, you know. That you put somebody in a tough position. The boss is saying, look, things are tough. It's gonna really hurt the company. Da, 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 da. Is it really okay? Is he really thrilled about it? Obviously not. It's not like it's really okay, but I'm agreeing.
The idea is just that maybe that's not gonna be like permanent.
Right. Okay, we're talking about delaying. Okay, now another case. If the employer has a reputation of paying late, then it doesn't. Then, if the employer has a reputation of paying late, then there's an expectation. Nothing says represents. Okay. Then there's a given expectation that you're not going to get paid. If a company is known to pay late, then you kind of know that. If people know that, then you know that when you work for them. Now, what if the employer has no money? This is very, very. This comes out. This is what everyone is asking about. This. What if the employer has no money? So again, the halacha is that if a person doesn't have money, they don't transgress the commandments. Only if you have it. So now, what if he doesn't have money? So now, the halacha is if he has money in the bank, he doesn't have to have cash in his pocket. If he has money in the bank, he has to get it. The halacha is he does not have to sell. There's different ways of expressing it in the postgame, but he doesn't have to sell his personal assets at a loss. That's one way of saying it.
How does it work? If he doesn't have money, but then when he gets money, it's already past that loy sullen time period.
So there's no daraisa.
So you can never be over loy sullen.
Exactly.
So you're still over loy sasha.
Right.
Give money to me. And
exactly right. That's one of the examples where you were off the hook for the first day,
right.
and then it doesn't kick in.
What about your money is invested?
We're going to get there, maybe. So now you don't have to sell your personal assets at a loss or things that are not for sale. One is the ritva, one is the shulchan aruch harav. Things that are not for sale. So you don't need to sell your car in order to pay your workers on time. Fine, we'll skip that for now. The halacha is if you don't have enough money to pay all, you do have to pay part. The mitzvah, it's not, even though the mitzvah is to pay all, we don't say if you can't do all, I'm off the hook. Whatever you can pay, you're required to pay. And the halacha is that the post can bring that it's worthwhile to try to borrow if you can easily to pay. So you're not required to do that by the Torah law, but it's something that the post can say is praiseworthy to do. Here's another one, very nageah, Mr. Yitzchak. If you're hired by an intermediary, then it doesn't apply. Basically, what it breaks down to is that if the person who did the hire, it's really very practical by many corporations, by many companies. If the person who's doing the hiring is a different person than the person who's responsible for paying those people, so then it doesn't apply. Finished. The Gemara actually suggests that you do that to protect yourself from transgressing. Have somebody else.
Same company.
Oh, so one second.
To work around.
Huh?
If Shmuel, I understand, maybe something's a different, literally a whole different company hiring, but let's say, I don't know, your company, and you hire someone to be the person to hire for me to hire.
Yeah.
He's working for you. Right.
So that may be different. That may be different.
You
maybe.
Like a recruiter or a hunter or something?
No.
The HR person works for the
HR. They'll pay.
The person who works for Jordan is being paid by Jordan to go out and hire people to do this job. Jordan.
But they're not. Wait. You're not. He doesn't. The HR doesn't go out and hire people. They don't go seek.
They're talking. They're talking, and they're the ones that say, "This is how much you're going to get paid. You're going to get paid on the 15th. You're going to get paid on the air.
Right.
This is what we're telling you. There's the contract. Sign it." So the corporation is not responsible. That doesn't make any sense. Working for the company,
That particular
certain type thing. Well, that's different.
This company, I understand, maybe it's a little different.
That potentially would be. That's not so clear what you're saying. There's a case that Rabbi Yasha was asked about, which is where somebody hired an employee for a company, but the boss, who's in charge of paying, whoever it is that's in charge of paying, was like aware the person was there. He was around the business, whatever it is. So there, the halacha was the initial payday, by where the boss really didn't know anything about the guy. So he doesn't transgress. Once the boss interacts with the guy and he sees he's there, even though he didn't do the act of hiring him, but it's implicit in his being around and working with him that he accepts that which he's hired. Like, he's taking responsibility. That's like as if he took...
You got to go over to the CEO and let him know you're there.
So
in
your supervisor.
Yeah. So in a small establishment, that would be much easier. In a company like in a big company, we're talking about Harbor Group. So there, it's very, very possible that the person whose job it is to pay has no clue that you exist.
Right.
So there, it's a different issue. And like you said, it may be different because the person hiring is job is to hire for them, and the word gets back to the people. Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. It's a real. We'll see where it comes up in halacha, but it's not so clear in that case. It's not so clear in that case.
No, that's the problem. That's right. There's no such thing as a corporation, really, in halacha.
Right.
That's
the problem. So how can we be saying that
whoever's responsible? It means whoever's responsibility it is to pay.
Right. My point is that, like, the Gemara was talking about a case where, like, you're saying the Gemara suggested that you should do this to make sure that you never, that you don't get, that you, like, you don't never do it. But then we're saying that you have to not meet the
presumption.
Where would that apply?
No, no,
meet. So you take the same rules. You have to plug
but
in
it,
what
so
that
would
what
be
we
no,
expect.
Yeah.
When you don't hire anyone.
Okay, let's move on. fine. Now, how to, in terms of how to avoid Baal Talin. So, this is brilliant advice. You can write this down. The first way is to actually have the money to pay. Post can say that. Okay. No, but they say that. They say, like, before you hire somebody, have the money. Like, because, you know, don't plan on it's gonna. If you can have the money ahead of time, that's the best. Okay. I don't know. That's a good question. I'm not sure. Hiring through an intermediary is an eighth of the Gemara shows is something to avoid it. And then the other way is to stipulate ahead of time. If you stipulate ahead of time certain terms of late payment, probably no one's going to take a job if you tell them you can pay whenever you want. But if you give yourself some leeway ahead of time, then that's good. Okay, fine. So now that I grant you all smicha as good as mine. Let's talk about some practical cases, okay? So you have a babysitter. You hire a 7th, 8th grade girl from Taras Chaim to come babysit. You get home at night, and you realize you don't have any money on you.
Thanks.
What do you do?
Ask your wife.
They understand.
For money.
Ask your wife for money. Your
just
wife.
Give her your watch and say, I'll pay you in the morning.
Huh?
Give her your watch.
That's not an opinion we really rely on if you have other reasons. What?
If you're a Kollel rabbi, then the babysitter understands you're probably not going to have money when you come home. Right?
That's a very good point. maybe they expect you to shake out the pennies from the pushka. Okay, what? Yeah.
On the way dropping her off at home, you stop at the ATM.
Excellent. If you have money in the bank, you must go to the ATM, even if it's a pain in the neck. You have to go to the ATM to take out money. One thing I would throw in at first is she didn't ask for the money. She didn't ask for the money. I would think that Mr. Yitzhak is correct. That, I mean, maybe nowadays it's different. When I was a kid, you'd be embarrassed to ask for the money. If that's the case, then you have to pay anyway. Otherwise, if they're older or if they're just more chutzpahdik, so then the fact that they didn't ask may be an indication.
I thought they could say it's okay. You can tell them. Listen,
if you ask, yeah, if you ask them,
okay.
Yeah.
I'll gladly pay you for babysitting.
Yeah, fine.
You should pay in that situation with cash rather than with
check. Now, what about check? What about paying with a check? Right, so, like, I think...
Better to stop at the ATM than to write a check.
Writing a check, I would think, is not so good. It's, again...
It's
only where the minig... Yeah, yeah. Because it's only... I would think it's really bad because the minig, I would think, is not to pay... it's not one of the jobs that people get paid in check is babysitting. And it would depend on America or Israel, but even an adult, we don't pay checks for babysitting.
But you don't get the mitzvah if you give them a check.
Yeah.
Right. If you want to get the mitzvah and you want to be over, not over the Los Alamos and those things.
According to Moshe Feinstein or Rabbi Yashiv, paying a check where the custom is not to take checks for that particular job, you're not allowed to. You're not allowed to pay with a check. Okay. Now, what happens if you get home and you owe her $15, all you have is a 50?
Give her the 50.
You have a mitzvah to yeah, you have to pay, okay? Yeah, absolutely. Right. Fine. Now, what happens in a case where, let's say, you're going to be out for a while and you're having one person babysit for a few hours and then she's going to switch with somebody else, she's going to go home. Do you have to go to her house and track her down and pay her before sunrise?
No. I say yes. Understanding is...
Right, so I think Rabbi Lederman is right. That she understands that if she's leaving before you get home, she's not getting paid tonight. She doesn't expect you to come knocking on her door. When she agreed to those circumstances, she knew that. As long as the worker entered into the arrangement with an understanding that we weren't getting paid tonight, there's no...
What does that mean, though? Do you have to tell her that, or is it just an understanding?
I think it's self-understood.
That would be ideal. You could say, look, I'll pay you when I see you again.
And if she calls and asks for it, then you have to go pay for it.
She might be crazy. It could be that the normal thing is you don't get paid. You don't get paid. I don't track you down to your house to look for you to pay for you when you go home. I'll pay you next time I see you. That's the normal way of doing things, I think. Okay, let's go to a taxi. Okay, so this is where I think it comes up a lot. I don't know. A lot of times, let's say you're in a rush, especially. So if you're at a red light or something like that, right before your stop, many of us will take out the money and try to pay the taxi driver. He'll stop the Monet, or won't. But you'll pay the taxi driver right before your stop, so that when you get there, you could run out to wherever you're going. Right. So we discussed that according to many poskim, you fail to fulfill your mitzvah, say, by doing that. So you paid early. You didn't pay before. You paid before his due.
It wasn't before the whole job.
Before it's finished. In Eina Sekiris Mishtalemes Elevasof, you don't owe the money until the job's done.
If he stops the thing, though, then it would be the job's over.
I don't know about that. That's a good question.
But he's accepting it. He's accepting it in lieu of the job. He's accepting the money in lieu of the job.
He's accepting
the money until he gets back to the
job. He's accepting it. You're not over on Baal Talin, but you didn't do the mitzvah
saseyim. The mitzvah paying. I'm not so sure that stopping the meter is an indication that the job is done. It's just the charging is done. The job's not done until you get there.
If the meter says 25 shekel on it, and you give him 30 shekel now, I'm going to get out at the next place, you should at least be getting the mitzvah for the 25 shekel, because if I would have told him, you know what, I'll get out here.
Yeah.
Then I'd be high at the 25 shekel.
The job's not done yet.
But the job of the first 25 shekel job. Ain't
schiris mishtalemes
elo
vasot.
I want to get out. This is the end. I'm paying now.
Right, this is the end.
The job's not done. If the driver said, okay, get out, he would say, what are you talking about? We're not done.
How much are you paying?
It doesn't matter. Either way, it doesn't matter. The job's not done till it's done. When means that you don't owe him a penny until the job is done. So even though he worked 50 hours already, but you don't owe him a penny until he finishes. Until the driver is done driving, you don't owe him. So 1/8 says what Dr. Rosenberg said is that you can hand him the money and say, like, don't take it. It's not yours until we get there.
Really?
What's wrong with that?
He's the employer. The passenger's the employer.
Huh?
The passenger's the employer. He's fine. I need you for a week. No, you know, I don't only need you for 2-3 days. Here's the money for 3 days.
Yeah, that's true. If you finish the job, the taxi driver, you're not finished. You're not. You still want him to take you the 30 feet from the red light to the stop.
So with Uber, you won't be able to say that because it goes automatically on your card.
Right.
You're not over, but you're not in the application.
You should tell the New York cab company. They might use that as an advertising point.
But you can pay a taxi. You can pay somebody ahead of time for the whole trip. And if he accepts it, you're in business. Like, I want to go to Cincinnati. I'm going to give you, will you take $100 of going to Cincinnati?
Right.
The guy accepts it.
Agreed.
Before the trip is over with,
you're
finished. The same thing of paying ahead of time. Even
if you haven't, you haven't done an Aveira, but you've missed the opportunity to do a mitzvah. Right? There's a positive commandment to pay a worker on time. You haven't done that. You didn't transgress it. You just took away the opportunity to do it.
Just don't give him the number of the street.
You're telling him this isn't so.
But then get out.
No,
you're not.
I tell you to stop.
I disagree. You could do that.
Sure.
You could do that. But what if the driver says, you know what, get out here? You're going to say, what are you talking about? You're going to say. Okay. So that's possible too. Okay, taxis, paying for a taxi with a credit card. Another thing, just to point out, right? You can pay taxis with a credit card now. Just pointing out, you're missing an opportunity to fulfill a mitzvah daraisa. You have a mitzvah in the Torah to fulfill paying a worker. You're not doing that when you're paying with a credit card.
No,
it's acceptable, and you have a right to force
him. Negative credit. You're not getting. Okay.
You have a right to force him to accept it, but you're missing that opportunity. Right.
It depends if it's
Al Monet or not. Okay, if he's in Israel, a lot of times they won't run the meter. Let's just pack. Okay, fine. Appliance repair. You have an appliance repair man come. Same thing. So first of all, you don't want to pay the guy early. You want to pay him only when he finishes working. Now here's an interesting thing. What happens is you hire a guy and he has to do all kinds of things and he's patching around in your appliance and he has to take one of his own screws out of his own toolbox in part of his repair. Now what?
As long as he doesn't charge for it.
So
does that make the whole thing into a sad?
I saw somebody say a modern day Dayan.
Yeah, I was quite talking to Rabbi Cook. He missed what you said. Can you tell him again?
I'll tell him later. But I know. I got it. We're talking about a case where you have an appliance repairman come and he patches around for an hour fixing your appliance, and in the course of doing that, he had to use one of his own screws in part of the repair.
That's what you're paying him for.
Well, you're what? So I saw in a modern day halakhic authority, not somebody I heard of, but he seems to be somebody that he said it's a sale. At that point, it's a sale. Now, I personally find that hard to believe. You should ask a rav. I find that very hard to believe that when the guy's working for an hour and you're paying him $500 to fix your freezer, you're paying him $500 for the screw he pulled out of his toolbox. But he says that according to that principle that when he uses his own materials, it's called a sale. That if he uses any of his own parts, it's a sale. Okay, so there are authorities that say
he says he was explicitly given for a screw.
He's talking about his own compressor. He's talking about a screw. Now, the next question I would ask is if they replace a major part, like the compressor. So there, that's a little more gray, I think.
Does it make a difference who the screw belongs to?
Yeah, it does. No, his screw.
It doesn't matter.
The point is if he's besides labor, he's supplying something for which you're paying.
Materials.
There are materials that were provided in addition to labor.
But what about the materials that say the materials that say are in his toolbox that are his?
Yeah.
And the materials that were provided by his company to fix.
It doesn't matter who you're paying.
It doesn't matter who you're paying. Usually, give you an itemized bill at the end, right?
Yeah.
So he writes in there $20 parts and $150 labor. So you have to pay him for the $150 for labor and the parts.
I doubt it. Let's say you go to a tailor and the tailor says your bolt of fabric cost whatever and my labor cost whatever. I don't care. I'm paying you $200 for the suit. Whatever, you can break it up however you want.
What about a mover? Mover comes in, all of a sudden he starts pulling out like extra tape, and he does extra tape on everything. Then he starts charging you $1,000 for the tape.
Yeah.
So like, what's
it's a screw on top.
That's the question.
He's losing.
Why is the price of the X plus expensive?
It's a good question. Okay, yeah, I have to ask her up. Okay. Now, what about going to the mikveh? You go to the mikveh, and do you have an isser deraisa for not paying the mikveh, a mitzvah deraisa by paying the mikveh? Okay, so if the policy is suggested or flexible or whatever it is, then it's fine. But let's say, barring taking down all the signs and everything. So if Scheinberg,
now that we know,
what?
Before or after?
Also, a good question. So if Scheinberg says,
what? Who are you paying?
It's community.
Enough of you.
You're renting it from the organization. If Scheinberg says you're renting the building, so you have a mitzvah baltalin and yom titin scharav for paying. Your mikveh fee, and therefore, like Gedalia is pointing out, you should pay after, or have in mind that the money doesn't become the mikveh until you leave. If that's subject to the debate of property, not real estate, but building. If you use a towel from the mikveh, for sure you have to.
Yes, that one you definitely pay.
Absolutely. Okay, fine. Because you're renting the towel, but it's a very interesting way of looking at it. You're renting the mikveh. Okay. Fine. Same thing, just pointing out the obvious. A wedding hall, right, is renting a building. People maybe don't think of it. You're renting a Jewish wedding hall. The chasana finishes at night, presumably. And unless there's some kind of minig, not that way, you have to pay the guy before you leave that night. If you don't pay by sunrise.
And the flower.
And all those guys. All the chasana people.
Unless it's a contract to the contrary.
Right, right.
Bold letters. They write a contract that says you have to pay half up front to reserve it, and then the rest at that night.
Yeah.
You lose your mitzvah sase?
I would think not. What the rental is, whatever is left, that's how much you're paying.
I think most of the time, the smarter rental places usually tell you before the affair starts, you need to pay the rest of it. Does that count also?
If you lost your mitzvah then.
I would think not.
They're not letting you start the wedding until they... Until
you don't owe... Then. It's not called rental unless... rental is only at the end.
When you finish using it.
Yeah. Rental is only when you're finished using something. Anytime there's a stipulation that you pay in advance...
I just rented an apartment in Israel. Yeah, I didn't pay up front before I even went there.
Right.
So can he have that in mind? Can he have that in mind?
Same thing with the first time doing it anyway.
I'm paying you now, but I don't want the account to kick in.
You can make an arrangement. You could do that. You could do that. It's not going to work if the guy uses the money. You said you could say don't be cunt of the money till you can. If the guy agrees to it, he'll agree to it.
But yeah, I thought that if you hire their services consistently, you don't have to pay on time.
If there's an understanding that.
So the mikvah, it's not.
I don't think the mikvah necessarily has an understanding. If they do, they do. If they don't, they don't. They don't necessarily have an understanding that you come once in a while and you pay every third or fourth time.
Some people have asked.
If there is. If not. Some mikvahs have very clear signs. We expect you to pay when you come in and when you leave, whatever it is, every time. We don't let you do credit with the mikvah. It depends on the understanding, right?
So the mikvahs in Eretz Yisrael that have the turnstiles of the thing.
Yeah.
They're being mevatel, whatever. Not mevatel, but they're taking away that mitzvah safe from everybody. The way it works in most mikvahs in Eretz Yisrael has a turnstile, and you have, like, it's like a vending machine. You put the money in, and then you walk through the turnstile.
You're using it.
That means you're losing out on your mikvah.
You're using it wrong. You're supposed to sneak in with the guy in front of you and pay on the way out. Okay, fine. What? Why do you think they make each thing a room for three people?
No, but the guy in front of you has to pay.
Somebody's got to bite the blood for the team. Okay. Okay, moving along. Paying for a wedding hall with a check, subject to all the same things. Like if it's the minig, which it probably is, then it's okay. But you missed the opportunity to do the mitzvah. If someone doesn't get paid by check, then if whatever, I don't know, let's say bands didn't get paid by check. I'm sure they do. But if they didn't, then it would be a problem. Okay. A waiter. Here's an interesting one. What about a waiter at a Shabbos event? You have a kiddush or a ifruf, and you hire waiters. So,
what's understood?
He's not allowed to work on Shabbos for money.
But they don't finish their job until Shabbos.
The rabbi.
Right.
And schiris inam shabbos masal b'masayif.
So yeah.
That's all a favor.
That's
confusing. The job is Friday.
Well, you
I don't understand. True, it's not
true.
If they don't do the Shabbos part, they don't get paid.
That's a condition.
Okay, but it's understood you're not paying him on Shabbos.
Right. So like
for Shabbos work. That's what you're doing.
It's behavlah. Yeah.
It's a Jewish way.
You are behavlah.
Yeah. So he understands.
No, you're paying for a full week of work, including Shabbos.
Are you just yelling out Hebrew words? You have to stay after class. Okay, so it's like Rabbi Katz is saying, he has an understanding that he's not going to get paid when he's due, and then once you don't have to pay the first time, so there's no deraisa anymore. So it's just the derabanan of Baal Tisha not to delay his payment, but this or deraisa would never, the biblical transgressions would never kick in for a waiter that worked at a Shabbos event, according to some opinions. Okay, sorry, according to some things. Then that would. It could be. I think the other opinion is that maybe his time to get paid is Sunday or Matzi Shabbos. What's called the time to get paid? It could be that it's a given that you're. Okay. Here's the case. Now, your company pays a monthly salary to its workers. This month, you have suffered many losses and cannot pay everyone on time. What should you do? Have you violated the mitzvah of Baal Tullin? Fine. That's it. What if you have other bills? You owe suppliers and the electric company, and you have a bunch of workers, and you don't have enough money. What do you do?
Pay Jewish people first.
Okay, pay Jewish people first.
If you don't pay the electric company,
you're not going to get paid.
To pay the next month.
If the company goes out of business, there won't be any more money for any jobs for anybody.
You have to ask them that.
You have to go to the workers and say, look, I want to pay you, but if I do, I can't pay the electric company. I have a chiyuv to pay you. Is it okay if I don't pay you so you can keep your job next month?
Sure, it's okay, no problem.
That whole speech came very easily to you. Have you used that before? Yeah, so borrowing money. Right. Sometimes people aren't so thrilled to lend money to somebody who can't afford to pay their work. okay. So really, like I think everyone's pointing out, is that paying your workers has to come before paying the bills halachically, because you have more averas. There are more mitzvahs concerning paying workers than paying electric. But now you're making a very logical argument. The workers may very well agree otherwise, but your priority has to be to them. Right. Right.
But the supplier is a Jewish person also.
But still, you have more. There are more averas on this than that.
You bought stuff.
Right.
If he's the cable company, he's a Jewish guy, right? So I'm his avsachir, all of his materials and things, it's the same thing. It's the same.
What?
I mean, presuming that the people who are in the United States, the companies, whatever, they're not Jewish.
Right.
But if you're in a situation where the person who is the utilities are also
in Israel, the electric.
Well, your electric bill's not paying for a laborer. It's renting something.
You're renting their.
You're paying for a commodity.
People that won't use electricity on Shabbos from the Israeli electric company.
That's right. Because they'll do work for
you.
It's a Chalashem thing. But this is you're buying a commodity, electricity, water.
Right.
You owe them money, but it's not a worker. There's no, all these affairs apply to wages owed. You don't rent the generator.
If the pole goes down outside, the line goes down, who has to fix it?
The electric company,
so I'm renting their wires.
I'm not renting the wires. They want to fix it to provide me, to in order to supply me the commodity.
Right.
Right? I'm buying, I think. Okay.
You're not going to pay for it if it's not working.
Now, poor workers would come before paying prioritization, would come before workers who are not poor, because there's an additional mitzvah lo seseh for withholding payment from a worker who's poor. So wherever there's more iser involved, that's your priority. So you should...
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Sorry, Virginia.
Okay.
You have a Jewish worker and a non-Jewish worker.
Yeah.
And both of them say, pay me.
Yeah.
And you have all these isurim for Jewish workers.
Yeah.
And the non-Jewish worker will say... It's a big hill, Hashem, for you not to pay.
That's a very good question. I have no idea. It's an excellent question. Yeah.
It's like a lawyer in the court. It's all settled by the non-Jew.
Non-Jew knows too much.
Exactly what to say, yeah. Miss Ellis is for sure, Michael.
They will say it.
Yeah. Okay. Fine. Now, then the halacha is, obviously, like we said, if you whatever you can pay, you do have to pay. So even if you don't have all the money, you have to pay what you can. Now, those items that are for sale, you need to sell. So if your company or whatever it is has a product that can be sold, you're required to sell it in order to come up with the money. What about stock? This is where your question came up. What happens if you own stock? So if you're right now where you bought it, whatever it was, and it's been down like a billion points, so then that's called a loss. But let's say it's not very far down from what it was when you bought it. So there are those that say that you're required to sell your stock in order to come up with cash to pay your workers. But you should ask a rav. And like the post can say, it's a good idea to borrow. So worst case scenario, what?
Is it considered like having money?
Mm-hmm. Look, the halacha is things that are for sale, you have to sell. Things that are personal, if it's a minor loss or nothing.
What?
Speak to your accountant.
Ask your accountant.
Somebody who has 200 zoos, right?
Can you give him yourself that category?
Like if your money was tied up,
you gained by selling it.
Right, that's a good point. Right, maybe I don't know for sure, but I imagine that the definition is by Torah definition. Okay, here's a really really fun case. We have two more good ones. Okay, let's say you go to Tel Aviv. You go to the airport in Tel Aviv, and you. You have a porter, a Jewish porter takes your bags for you, and you go to the bathroom, and you come back, and you can't find the guy. He moved your bags, you can't find the guy, and...
It's like the babysitter who leaves early, isn't it?
Well, no, because you left, you packed out. The guy, you were supposed to pay him, you disappeared, and the guy came back, and you don't know where you are, and you're going to miss your flight. What do you do?
You should have stayed with the bags until you came back.
He has to stay with his bags. He gets paid for running around working. If he stands by your bags waiting for you,
he didn't finish the job.
Huh? He took it wherever it's supposed to go, and then he dropped
out. You don't know where to pay him.
What are
your options? Are you gonna find him? It's possible to find this guy.
You're yeah. Yeah.
It's an airport. It's not the whole planet.
But if you'll miss your flight,
you're gonna miss your flight. You'll find him.
You'll find him or miss your flight.
You'll find him or miss your flight.
If you know he was Jewish,
and Tel Aviv.
Maybe he's a Breslover. What if there's a set?
If it's an expected tip, it's not so much that as an event tip anymore.
Right.
You're gonna say
he might be upset at you if you give him 10 shekel, but
if it's expected, then
it's expected that you have a doraisa and versus missing your flight.
Yeah, actually,
sounds like you have to go find him now.
So we have.
I don't know. You don't have to pay him. You don't have to.
Let's say you do.
You're going to lose money by missing your flight.
Right. But you're having.
Okay, so
I'm not asking for it. I don't know what's the issue with him.
Yeah, he ran away.
He didn't ask.
The only reason why he didn't ask is because you disappeared.
Okay, but you said before, if he doesn't ask, he doesn't ask.
The reason why he doesn't ask.
He doesn't ask you, then you're going to run away.
Huh?
He doesn't have to chase you around.
You've been a porter before.
He doesn't have to chase you around.
You have no obligation to pay him.
The way I understood what Rabbi Danziger said was that it's only because that implies that he doesn't want his wage. If for all you know he would want it, he just couldn't find you because you disappeared. It doesn't apply.
So
you have a responsibility and
track him down.
Fine. So we have a rule that you have to lose all of your money not to transgress a negative commandment. But the poskim say here. I saw two arguments. One is that since it's b'shev v'al tase, you transgress a negative, but you transgress it through inaction, as opposed to through doing something forbidden through inaction. So you're not required to lose all of your money. So another argument, this is where it comes in, this nitik lase type of thing. The chuvis mutzal me'esh says that since you're able to pay at a later date, you're not required to give up all your money. But for a positive commandment and according to, I forgot who else I saw, and even a negative commandment when it's through inactivity, you do have to give up a fifth of your money. Ad chomesh. So if the loss of the flight and whatever connected events that you'd be losing are a loss less than a fifth of your net worth, then you're required to miss your flight. That's what I saw.
Could you ask
a rabbi.
Somebody to stand there for 12 hours.
Yeah.
Look, stand here, hold the sign. Looking to pay the
porter.
So-and-so. Stand right here.
You're going to have a line out the door.
Just stand here, find somebody to get.
Yeah, probably.
He ran away.
He didn't run away. His job is to go around doing stuff.
Continue working. Stay here. 1 minute.
I'll
be right out. If he agrees, he agrees.
But there's no mitzvah logos. This is a mitzvah to say that you might be overrun.
His job required. But you did.
You might be overrun a mitzvah to say there's no logos.
Why? You didn't pay him when you owe money.
But it's not logos.
It is. It's a logos.
You made a contract to pay the guy.
There's no contract. You owe the money today. You didn't pay today. It's a logos. It's a logos.
That's overrun a mitzvah to say.
And a logos.
What's a logos?
Don't let him go. Don't let the night come without paying him. You let the night come. You're out.
If you can't find the guy, yeah.
You're required to hang around. You could find him.
It's the same as Shavas Aveda also, right? You have to give up a lot. Say you found somebody's sheep and you're going on a trip.
Okay, but that's easier because you can't. Because there, if it's going to cost the guy, he has to reimburse you for your expenses. So if he's going to lose, okay. Now one last case. This is very interesting. What if you tell your kid, if you clean up your room, I'll get you a Slurpee.
Your kids know you're not going to get it. Kids know you're going to forget you're not going to get it.
That's what I thought. Okay, that's one.
If you ask my kids, they would tell you that.
That is one.
What?
It's like paying yourself.
Right.
Why is
I saw somebody say that. Okay, Mr. Yitzchak made a point that the halacha is... So I saw somebody say this, that the halacha is that any money that your child gets becomes yours. So therefore it doesn't apply. But I have a hard time with that because I think if you're the one giving the money, it does become theirs. I think that's the halacha. So
the halacha is, is if somebody gives money to the kid and he says, it's yours and your father has no right to this money, then it belongs to the kid and does not belong to the father.
But could the kid coin the money?
He is coining the money.
Yeah. If he's underage, he owns the money.
That's the problem.
He belongs it. So if the father gives money, it's even more so that it belongs to the kid and not to the father. Because the father's
taking care of it.
Well, that's a whole thing.
Okay, so one more argument besides having Mistafi's argument, which I think is very strong.
I'm
not joking either. I think that's very true. Maybe the fact that every single time they throw a tantrum is an indication that for some reason they don't expect that to happen, but I don't know. Just one more argument. I wonder if it's not a wage at all. I wonder
if it's a good thing, right?
He said, if you tell them to clean the room, your kid is never going to do a complete job, so you're never owed them.
Well, that's what you had in mind. That's what you had in mind.
It's not a wage.
It's not a wage. It's a reward.
It's incentive.
They're going to come back and say, do I get the slurpee now? If it's not done, they're going to say, you go.
The Poskim asked that. Why isn't it Baal Talin for Hashem not to pay us in Olam Hazeh? They talk about that. They talk about that. So one of the Poskim says because we never finished our job. And in light of that, we should finish our job. And let's see what's the name of Tavish. Go ahead.
Amen.